Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris and you're watching Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. This year's theme for International Women's Day is Gender Equality Today for a Sustainable Tomorrow. Now, this reflects the two most pressing challenges of our generation that requires our immediate action: gender inequality and the climate crisis. Now, as we better understand and make the critical connection between gender, social equity, and climate change, what this means is that women need to be put at the heart of the climate response at every level. So to discuss this further, we have joining us on the show Ko Miawi. She is a gender advocate or gender advisor at UNDP's Regional Bureau for Asia and the Pacific. And she's got some two decades worth of experience promoting gender equality and women's empowerment through the Global Development Agenda. Welcome to the show, Ko. It's really good of you to join us today.
Thank you, Melissa. Very nice to meet you, and thanks for inviting me to be on the show.
Wonderful. So, you know, I want to begin our conversation today, Ko, by looking at how women, particularly women and girls from marginalized communities, are, I guess, being increasingly recognized as being more vulnerable to the climate crisis. And I'm just wondering how you how those vulnerabilities present itself. Maybe you can help us better understand in what ways are women disproportionately impacted?
Yes. Well, what makes women and girls more vulnerable in a climate crisis actually goes way back before the climate crisis. Then gender inequality existed for a long time. And in every crisis, women and girls are coming out as vulnerable group. And every time special efforts are made to reach out to them, and more increasingly so and more efficiently so. But then in the next crisis, we find them in, again, vulnerable positions. And that's not just about the nature of the crisis. It's because of the gender inequality that has existed for a long, long time. So if we want to talk about gender inequality and the vulnerable and marginalized positions of women and girls in a crisis, a climate crisis, we do need to go back to a broader challenge of gender inequality.
I see. Okay, so the climate crisis just exacerbates the inequality that is already there. So the inequality has become worse. I'm thinking of another crisis. I'm thinking of the pandemic. The pandemic, which has also exacerbated some of the inequalities that we've seen. And I'm just wondering whether the kind of double crisis or multiple crises that we see, how that actually makes women and girls far more vulnerable because, further challenged in their ability to withstand the impact from these crises.
So I think that the COVID-19 pandemic really exposed how fragile our societies are, how unsustainable our societies are when it comes to crisis. So our societies have been depending on women's unpaid and underpaid care work, and this model has just been exposed as unsustainable by the pandemic. Over 70% of women health frontline workers are women, and over 70% of unpaid care work is carried out by women. And what the pandemic revealed is that the fragility and unsustainability of that model. And what I think a climate crisis is revealing is that how actually women and men having different experiences and their opportunities, coping mechanisms, and also survival likelihood are very much influenced by the existing gender norms and also imbalanced power dynamics in our communities, in our households.
Yeah, I love that you brought up the issue of unpaid care work, and I would love to kind of flesh that out in our conversation. But I'm just going to stay on the issue of the climate crisis and how climate the impacts of climate change, how that the, and the vulnerabilities to women, how that intersects between gender and social equity, and also sometimes other factors come into play, race and different forms of marginality, right?
Yes. So there are several examples of how climate change impact even, you know, further negative impact on women's empowerment or gender equality, or the position of women and girls in their societies. When the household starts losing income due to climate change, and when the household is no longer earning enough income to feed the family, because of the existing imbalanced power dynamics within the household, women and girls tend to suffer more. So, for example, girls may be more likely to be pulled out from schools, so their opportunity to be educated will be further reduced. They may even be married off at early age, and that's a form of gender-based violence. And in many households, women are the because of their unpaid care work responsibilities, they have to put the table on food on the table, not the table on the food, food on the table, and you know, with limited and reduced income, women would find it difficult to find those food, and in rural areas where they may be able to or may have been able to go and collect some food and fuels for cooking and so on before, in a reasonable or probably less, maybe not reasonable, but you know, less time than before. But now they would spend more time going to find fuels or water. So perhaps the household is having an issue with food security. And this may lead to violence within the household. And because of the existing imbalance and the perpetuated norms that it's okay for husbands to beat his wife to send a message that she's done something wrong, for example, then that would just lead to further violence, because that kind of violence is tolerated in a household.
I see. I had read that climate change had increase the vulnerability of women to gender-based violence, and I wasn't quite sure of the connection. So that is the connection. The connection is that the other insecurities actually make the conditions within the household a lot more volatile and conducive for gender-based violence. Okay, I want to ask how then we can help address that, because those are some of the repercussions of gender norms and gender inequalities that come that present itself because the environment's degradation, because the climate is changing. How do we then look to address that? Do we address the climate? Do we address the degradation of the environment, or the gender norms first? What do we tackle?
Right. So one thing is that we need to understand how different individuals are experiencing climate crisis differently. We tend to think because the climate is, you know, it's so big and it impacts everybody, we think that if we can resolve the climate problem, then everything will be okay for everyone. But it's not, because of the socioeconomic or geographical or many other reasons, individuals experience climate crisis differently, if we don't surface those differences and then reflect them in our responses, we will be leaving someone behind.
And what kind, I hear you when you say, you know, we need to ensure that we bring everyone along in our climate response, but do we have the kind of gender-specific and gender-disaggregated data that is required to ensure that we understand the kind of intersection between the climate crisis and gender, but also how it impacts women of different communities differently? Is that kind of data being collected and also disseminated?
Yeah, sadly, no. Because we talk about SDGs a lot, within all the different goals, there are some goals which really lack in data for tracking purposes. And SDG 5, which relates to gender equality, is one of the most lacking in data goal. So it's already very difficult to get the full picture of what a gender inequality situation is like anyway. Okay. And also we tend to look at a household as a unit of measurement in many of our research and monitoring. And we don't always try to understand the intra-household dynamics. But intra-house dynamics matters. Once I visited a house in Nepal, up in mountains, in the area where it suffered from the big earthquake, 2015. So they had this house, and outside the house, they had a solar panel, a small one, but it was definitely providing electricity to the household. Now, next to the house, there is a small house building, and that was the kitchen. And there was no electricity in the kitchen. So the person who spent time in the kitchen would be working in the dark, except the flame from the cooker. And so who is standing in the kitchen or sitting in the kitchen to do all that work while someone else is sitting inside the other building, the house, and maybe watching the TV or doing some homework with electricity, or maybe doing some income-generating work with the lighting. But the person who's spending time in the kitchen was not benefiting from the electricity connection. So intra-household dynamics really matters. For example, COVID-19. We talk about like accessibility to digital technology. And just to think about how many computers or laptops does one household have? And if we're under lockdown, how many household members need to access that computer? Who get the priority? And do we still say that everybody in that household have access to computer? Or do we have to say that, okay, within households, there is a pattern. And if we look at other households, maybe we can see common pattern. And what we are finding is that common pattern tends to suggest that women have less access than men to digital technologies.
That's quite fascinating, because as a whole, you would think that, okay, so you check the box that says this house has electricity, this house has internet connection or a gadget. But when you get down to it, you understand the dynamics, the gender dynamics at play that may affect some of these inequalities. Fascinating, Ko. We're going to take a quick break here on the show, but let's come back and continue this conversation, particularly at what it means to put gender equality right at the center of climate action. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more on Consider This. Stay tuned. Hi, thanks so much for staying with Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, and I'm speaking to Ko Miaoui. She is a gender advisor at UNDP's Regional Bureau for Asia and the Pacific. We're discussing how climate change impacts women and girls, why gender equality is key to climate action, and what you can do to support solutions for women by women. Ko, let's talk a little bit about some of the positives that we've seen in the recent years, some success stories of women and girls who are leading the charge in taking climate action at almost every level. I'm just wondering, maybe you can share some of your observations, particularly in the Asia and Pacific region.
Well, actually, through UNDP's work, we find that there are more young women advocating and acting for climate change responses than the young men. We have a platform where, you know, we work with young men and women who would want to take action to address climate change. And 54% of the advocates and action actors that we work with actually women. And 40 5% are men and 1% non-binary. So actually, women are very much at the forefront of addressing climate crisis in this region amongst young women and young men. And I think this is something that we can look forward to for the future as well.
That makes me really happy to hear that. But is that being reflected in, say, the voices of these young women or women in general being heard at the policymaking level, at the decision-making level? Because what then does it mean for women's voices not to be represented when climate action policymaking is being crafted?
Well, yes, I mean, that's why I cannot share with you a success story very much. Although we have seen phenomenal female climate activists around the world, but when it comes to policy discussion, like a COP meeting, you see those meetings tend to be male dominated. Over the years, we have seen an increase in female delegation or delegate, but you know, we know that it's still more male than female in decision-making processes. And it was also this, similar because we talked about the other crisis, the pandemic. Only about a quarter of the national level task forces addressing the pandemic were led by female, or participated, you know, at that level by female. So women are not equally represented at the decision-making levels, and which may or may not be the only reason, but it is certainly a major reason of why everybody's experiences are not reflected in the policies coming out from those bodies.
So what can we then do to ensure that these voices are not silenced or you know, left unheard, to ensure that the clear passion and enthusiasm of young women and young people in general are taken into account? I guess I'm just wondering, because sometimes you think about the scope and the scale of climate action and climate change impacts can be quite daunting to know where to begin. What can, say, people watching tonight do to support women who are participating in climate action?
So one good way of supporting such a cause is there are investors who support women-led green businesses. And as we know, that we see a large proportion of female in SMEs in this region, and many of them are trying to use more green technologies and green means for businesses. And it's a good way of supporting them, and at the same time supporting climate action. And then if we look at a agricultural sector, we see female farmers who want to use more climate smart agriculture tools, but because of the prevailing gender inequality and exclusion of women from, you know, technologies that's kind of being perpetuated, they may not have access to those climate smart agriculture tools, and maybe, you know, it's a way of supporting them to ensure that they have access to those means. And so there are many ways that we can support as citizens of the world.
That's good to hear. In terms of policy making, one of the things that you pointed out earlier was the unseen or unrecognized care work. So care work has been underpaid and unpaid, not even underpaid, unpaid completely, and often treated like a limitless commodity that can be used without cost or consequence. And I'm just wondering, in terms of policy, that in itself can also help address not just gender inequality, but also help women who are trying to mitigate the effects of the climate crisis. What would you like to see in terms of policy on that front?
So let's take the childcare tasks. Because, you know, amongst very various tasks included in unpaid care work, childcare has a huge influence on women's career development. And yet, if they want to go out and work and get employed and then go up in their career ladder, it is a very a big obstacle. Now, it is also undervalued. Many mothers are considered naturally good at child rearing, and therefore they should be doing it on simply because they are mothers, and therefore it's nothing that they learned or earned or studied to do good job. So it means nothing, very little value attached to it. Childcare sector workers are paid very little as well. So we have an opportunity to change that. And why isn't childcare considered such less value? Another thing is, why are our policies encouraging that gendered division of housework? Mm. So look at the parental leave. And parental leave originally supported mother's well-being as well as the newborn's well-being, but can we then transform them to also support gender equality? We can, for example, increase the leave for fathers, and so the policy will give that message that this is to be shared, right? Not just for mothers, but it's to be shared. And also, going forward, we may see different forms of families, and we should be able to say childcare is shared equally amongst different household members, or obviously, the provision of affordable quality services is a definite must. So, and that can also be taken care of by policies, because, not only providing public services, policies can also hold the private sector employers accountable for providing an environment which is conducive for men and women to be able to do their 100%.
Mm. Well, one of the things, Ko, that I find quite interesting is because as a gender advisor for the Regional Bureau for Asia and the Pacific, you look at, not just some of the richest economies, but also some poorest economies. This is such a dynamic region. I'm just wondering what has been, in your observation, some of the catalysts for change. So when we see countries make progress in their gender equality, what has often been that kind of catalyst for progress?
Economic growth is not always an answer for improving gender equality. I'm from Japan, and my country has had a good economic growth in the past, but gender equality indicators did not improve accordingly. If you look at the, the World Economic Forum publishes the gender gap report every year. If you look at all the countries in Asia Pacific, the gender gap in education and health domains were very, very small anyway, even 16 years ago when they started collecting the data. It was almost non-existent. The gender gap in economy and political participation were always there, and they have not been closed. Even though a number of countries in this region have made huge success in economic development. So that's not really the trigger for gender equality. We need to change our social norms, the way that we value women and men. We need to attach equal value. We need to remove some of those harmful social practices that keep women in the house, housework, and also we need to work with men and women who think that's normal, right? That's the way it is. Now, we are now talking about new normal because of the pandemic. This is, for me, an opportunity to talk about new normal. Let's change the notion that, woman's place is at home and man has to go out and be the breadwinners. Maybe there are men who don't want to be the breadwinners. Maybe there are men who want to be stay-home fathers, just like there might be women who want to be stay-home mothers.
Yes, I completely agree. I think let's not waste the opportunity in this crisis to reset and maybe change some of those really harmful social norms. Ko, it's been such a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for being on the show today. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
That was my conversation with Ko Miyawi, gender advisor at UNDP, and that wraps up this episode of Consider This. Thank you so much for watching the show. I'm Melissa Idris. See you again tomorrow. Good night.